ourselves to know the nose of the crowd, success of the tongues in them, has Christ, we give away now. See, take time in Holy Spirit, keep some joy in today. Sayam, we put up in my own, and let yourself in the Mantika. One is a couple of this child, keep us in the way. Put it on, maybe we'll wait for maybe in the morning. In the seventh chapter, Krishna has explained those who know him and those who don't know him, the devotees, the surrendered, and those who are not surrendered, and those who don't surrender, don't know Krishna, because they think that he is impersonal, or they don't accept his existence, and this is due to him covering them by his potency, his shakti, his yogamaya, his mahamaya. He knows them, but they don't know him. And now in this verse, it describes how the living entity becomes bewildered into the state where he doesn't know Krishna. So this is 27. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammohan. All living entities become bewildered. Sagayante parantapa. As soon as they take birth, practically speaking, they become bewildered. Sarva bhutani, all living entities, sammohan, they become bewildered. Sagayanti parantapa. Just after taking birth. And why? Icha dvesha samutena. Because of dvandva mohena. They become bewildered, mohena, by the dvandva, the dualities of life, such as icha, desire, and dvesha, aversion or hatred. This is, so icha, dvesha, samudena, the duality, dvandva mohena bharata, the illusion born of the duality that come from desire and hatred, all living entities become bewildered as soon as they take birth, practically speaking. Now, especially those who are afflicted by the modes of passion, who want and want and have so many desires, that's the icha. And the jnanis very much are averse to the world, so they're bewildered by the dvesha, by the aversion. And everyone is caught by the duality. I want this, I don't want that, I don't want this, I do want that. I want two of those and one of those, but none of those. And our whole consciousness becomes absorbed in the dualities of material existence in this way. And we are bewildered. And what are we bewildered is that we don't see Krishna. So what is the consciousness of the devotee? And the next verse will explain how someone, one of these souls, becomes a devotee. How can actually someone become a devotee? But this verse explains the bewildering part. So what is the consciousness of someone who is a devotee that's different from I want, I don't want this, I don't want that, here's what I should get in this world, and if I don't get this, I'm miserable, and if I get this, I'm happy, and it's always shifting and changing, and we're completely bewildered by the happinesses and distresses that rain down upon us according to our fate. So the devotee sees Krishna. He doesn't see duality. He sees Krishna's mercy. So this is beyond duality. He sees the oneness of Krishna's mercy and Krishna's service. So it's oneness with variegatedness. And he sees Krishna in everything. So Prabhupada explains in one of his purports that a devotee lives in the mercy of Krishna. He's Krishna conscious. He's conscious of Krishna. here is Prabhupada's purportal scene of Bharata. Sin means O descendant of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, O Parantapa. All living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arising from desire and hate. Purport. The real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. See, when one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifest in the duality of desire and hate, and due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotees who are not deluded or contaminated by desire and hate can understand that Lord Sri Krishna appears by his internal potencies. But those who are deluded by duality and nescience think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is created by material energies. This is their misfortune. Such deluded persons systematically dwell in dualities of dishonor and honor, misery and happiness, woman and man, good and bad, pleasure and pain, thinking this is my wife, this is my house, I'm the master of this house, I'm the husband of this wife. These are the dualities of delusion. Those who are so deluded by dualities are completely foolish and therefore cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, when one sees the externals of existence as everything, certainly there is happiness, certainly there is distress, certainly there is male, certainly there is female, but this is external in that the soul inhabits all bodies and karma is causing happiness and is causing distress. And it has nothing, these things have nothing to do with the soul at all. I am the master of this house. What does the master mean? What does it mean if you're the master of something? You control it. And then when your soul leaves the body and your body is burnt, then where is your control of my house? My has just been, the minus, the body has been burnt into ashes. So, and then someone else moves into the house. Where were you born?
Christchurch.
Yeah, where?
In a hospital. Sorry.
In a hospital. Is the hospital still there? Is the place where you grew up? Now it's all, everything's taken up. But the house that you grew up in, yeah. Is it still there? Yeah. Do your parents still live there? Wow. I mean, that's stability plus. Not only your parents still live there, it survived the earthquake. Earthquakes. But it's such a peculiar experience when you go back to the house where you grew up and there are other people living there and everything is different and the neighborhood has changed. And because we think this was my place, but my place doesn't exist anymore. And it's like that even with my body. I think about my body in youth and I feel the same inside, but my body, that youthful body is gone. So it's a very bewildering circumstance for the soul who is in illusory identification with those things. So such a soul will be battered constantly by the illusions, by his fate, and be knocked this way and that way and this way and that way. I mean, through all the different emotions of life, and with a full identification with them. So it's like being in a great storm on the ocean and you're in a boat. Sometimes And sometimes that's not so bad. There's some story about this man. They were asking different people, what was the happiest moment of your life? And they asked one person, he said, oh, when I got my first house, second, he said, very intelligently, when I met you, dear, that was the happiest moment of my life. And then the third person said, when I was in that boat in the middle of the storm and the sharks were around me and I was all alone and the thunder was, and the lightning was going. He said, why was that the happiest moment of your life? He said, well, because 5 minutes before I was in the water. Something like a joke. So our happiness is, what's happy for us is relative to where we were previously. But if we don't have a shelter, like a boat, the boat, then we are battered around by the turbulent waves and winds of our Kali Yuga existence. So what is the boat? This is described in a few different places.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, the instructions of Krishna, the instructions of the methodologies that have been left behind. Because the Acharyas have crossed the ocean on the boat, but miraculously, the boat is still left behind. This is described in the second chapter, the 10th canto, and the 14th chapter. The lotus feet of the Lord are compared to a boat. So all these different, all the different instructions and methodologies, the chanting of the holy names, they are a boat. They're considered boats because they're all bring us in to the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna means Krishna. Lotus feet means Krishna's service. Krishna's lotus feet of the boat. So if we don't have the boat, that shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna's service, that security of that place that's stable amidst the storms of Kali Yuga, then what will be our fate? We get knocked around so much by the winds of our fate, our karma. And then we think, oh, only if I had better karma, and so I wouldn't have to suffer this, and I wouldn't have to suffer that. But everyone, there's no such thing as good karma, in one sense, because everyone's karma, it's like, what does it mean to be in a good situation for a prisoner? No, a prisoner is in prison. So his cell maybe has cleaner bars, but it's a prison. Sub asub. Everything that, there's no inauspicious and auspicious when it comes to material existence. It's all inauspicious. So that's so much for the dualities. So when one is attached to the dualities of this world, then one cannot give oneself to Krishna, because one is involved in the illusion, the dual. We want one side. We want one side. We want the happiness. We don't want the distress. We want the pleasure. We don't want the pain. But everything comes. Everything must come. Like when you take the heads of a coin, you say, no, thank you. I don't want the tails of the coin. And the man says, sorry, if you want the heads, you have to take the tails. That's the way it is. But if you say, I don't want either the heads or the tails, I want the boat. That's good. So there's one verse in the 11th canto that I wanted to refer to. one for this verse and one for the next verse. Srila Vishnu Chakravadita quotes in his commentary. Words of Krishna to Uddhava. He says, Yadrichchaya means somehow or another, like something like if by chance, or if somehow one comes, somehow by the grace of God, or just somehow it comes. Yadrichchaya mat katado. Somehow or another, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories. Such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. Bhakti yoga asya siddhida. He is given perfection through bhakti yoga. So this is the situation of a devotee. That's quite different from a materialist, is that he's neither too attached or too unattached either. He's neutral. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Uchite. He's neutral when it comes to the material world. It's like when a person who is full of material desires goes to a very wealthy man's house, he's thinking, oh, look what he has. I want one of those, and I want one of those, and I want one of those, and one of those. And then if there's a person who's a complete renunciant, he goes to a wealthy person's house, and he's... He won't look at anything, he won't touch anything. The man offers him something, no. And so that's the karmi and the jnani. But the devotee is like someone who's a servant in that house. He's neither attached to it, the things of the house, nor averse to the things in the house, but he sees everything as the property of the master. He's not envious of the person who owns the house, nor does he want to usurp his position. He uses everything in the service of the master. So that's the servant's position, that's the devotee's position. So read that verse again. Yadrishtaya ma kata adau. Jata Sradas. Jata means awakened. One who has awakened his faith somehow or another by good fortune in my glories. And such a person, non nivino na sakto, he has neither attachment, he's not neither very attached nor averse. Na vino bhakti yoga asya siddha. He will achieve perfection through loving devotional service. So icha dvesha samutena, so attachment and aversion, they are the bewilderment. Sarva bhutani sam an sagi anti parantapa. And we immediately, as soon as the soul comes into this material world in a little baby body, and first thing he does is cry because of the difficulties of the birth, and then he's fed. And some satisfaction, and then some pain, and then he cries, and then he wants something, and he cries more, and then he falls asleep, and he's a little bit satisfied, and then it's just back and forth and back and forth, and then the teeth start coming in. What happens when the teeth start coming in?
All the fingers are in the mouth.
And do you ever see a smile on the baby's face when the teeth are coming in?
So much pain.
So much pain. The teeth are trying. Where is this pain coming from? The very thing that gives me pleasure is my mouth. That's where I eat from. It's being the cause of pain. How confusing that is. But it's the first lesson. first lesson of life, practically, that which gives you pleasure causes you pain. And if you want the pleasure, you have to take the
teeth.
The teeth?
You have to get teeth if you want more pleasure.
Have you been preaching to her?
Neil with teeth. Brave Neil, fearless Neil with teeth.
We're developing into something, aren't we? So now the next verse. So someone, how do they become devotees to get beyond this? So the next verse explains. Yesham tvantagata papam zananam punyakarmanam te dvanva moha vinyamukta. Dvanva means that duality, like in the previous verse. Dvanva mohena bharata, bewildered by the dualities. Te dvanva moha, free from the delusion of the dualities. And then they bhajante mam, they worship me, drita vrataha, with fixed determination. So what kind of people are like that? Yesham tvantagata papam, one whose sinful reactions are completely eradicated. Jananam punyakarmanam, and they have punyakarma, they have piety. As a person, their illusion is removed and they worship Krishna with fixedness. So, this verse is interesting, verse 2. Prabhupada's translation. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Fixed, drita, vata, fixed determination. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. So, what does it sound like, the cause of bhajante mam dridavataha? From this verse, what would you think? That's what was said. What does it sound like, the cause of devotional services?
Pious activity.
Yeah, the freedom from sin and the and pious and having piety, but that's not actually the cause of it. But he will hear what the Prabhupada says. Those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulative principles of religion, who have acted piously, and who have conquered sinful reactions can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of God. Then gradually they can meditate and trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness, in the association of pure devotees. For in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. So it's not exactly that the piety and the freedom from delusion is the cause of the devotional service, but that allows one to associate with devotees and by the association of devotees, Brahman Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasarivai Bhakti Latabin. The seed of devotion is planted within the heart. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that if one actually wants to be liberated, he must render service to the devotees. Mahat sevam dvaramahur vamukte. So Huguna Maharaj is told this by whom? Lala Bharat. But one who associates with materialistic people is on the path leading to the darkest region of existence, because the desires of others are catching, like the common cold. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. The impersonalists do not know that forgetting their constitutional position as subordinate to the Supreme Lord is the greatest violation of God's laws. And thus one is reinstated in his own constitutional position. It is not possible to understand the Supreme Personality or to be fully engaged in his transcendental loving service with determination. That means that's what mukti is called in the Bhagavatam. Mukti hitvana rupa sarupena avastitaha. Is being again situated in your constitutional position, not to become the Supreme Personality of God. So 2 points here, and then a third point. First point is that the devotees are attracted to the pious, and sometimes, so that's the benefit of the piety, they have receptivity, and they're attracted to the devotees, they have some receptivity. And then sometimes the devotees are so magnanimous that they don't care, and if someone is pious or impious, and sometimes, as we saw with Srila Prabhupada, and Mahaprabhu was called Patita Pavana, he's the deliverer of the most fallen, and Krishna is known as Dinabandhu, the friend of the fallen. So sometimes the greatest condescence comes down to the most fallen, and that's considered mercy. That's the second point. The first, there's a natural affinity between the pious and the pure, both ways. And the second point is, yet sometimes the great compassionate souls are very liberal in their distribution of mercy. And the third point is what we were saying, that the piety is not the cause of devotion, because piety and impiety are the cause of enjoyment and suffering in this world. In India, you really see this, in the West also, but especially in India, sometimes you see these people who are so pious, they're like demigods. There's so much piety. But yet, it's not necessarily devotion. Devotion is service. So there's the second verse I wanted to read from the Bhagavatam, which is explaining also from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment, Vishnu to Udav. Yam na yogena sankena dana vratta tapo dvarai vyakya svadhyaya sanyasai prapnuyad yatnavadapi. Even though one engages with great endeavor in the mystic yoga system, yogena, philosophical speculation, sankhena. Dana means like? Vrata? Tapo? And advarai means ritualistic sacrifices. Vyakya, by explaining Vedic knowledge to others, and svadhyaya. What does svadhyaya mean? Study of the Vedas. Or sannyasai, taking the renounced order of life, sannyasi. Na, prapnuyat, can one attain yatnavat with great endeavor? One cannot attain me, even by doing these things. In other words, these are the most pious of activities, and they get the most punya, positive rewards. But yet Krishna says that still one cannot achieve me through these things. Even though one engages with great endeavor in the mystic yoga system, philosophical speculation, charity vows, penances, ritualistic sacrifices, teaching of Vedic mantras to others, personal study of the Vedas, or the renounced order of life, one can attain me, because one Krishna can be attained only with bhakti, and bhakti comes from the devotees, because they're the ones who have bhakti. And Krishna says that he doesn't even give bhakti directly. He explains this in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains this in his commentary on Savadamam Pratyaja Mamikam Saranam Raja. Krishna says that for you, Arjuna, my heart is so moved that I'm going to make an exception. I will give you bhakti. But otherwise, my rule is that I only give it to the devotees. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also explains this in Madhuri Kadambari, that it comes Kadambari. Comes through, bhakti comes through the devotees. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Any questions on this?
Focus on devotional service and don't get so much into fasting, quiet sharing.
Well, that's not material piety. Madhavatiti, bhakati, janani. To observe kadasi madhavatiti gives birth to bhakti. So there's bhakti, you could say bhakti piety. There's different kinds of pieties. One is karma, one is jnana, and one is bhakti. And they, what arises from the different pieties are different attractions or tendencies. So someone who has, like there's a story of one of the Dalmi is a very famous wealthy family in India, pious family. And they amass money like anything. So one of them said, if you took away all my money, you took away all my possessions, and you left me in the street with nothing, just my clothes, within 2 years I'd make back my fortune. Because they just know how to do it. They have that kind of piety that's called. And jnanis, there are people who are just born to be renunciants. And they just know how to do it. And then if you take a person who doesn't have financial karma and throw them into a big pool of money, it'll all be gone in a few years. And if you throw someone who doesn't have the punya for the piety for renunciation in an austere situation, they'll die. And a person who is very detached by nature will flourish. They love it. And neither of those may have any attraction to bhakti. And someone who by fortune means by previous association and by agyata sukriti, pious bhakti acts done unknowledgeably, then they just naturally become attracted to the holy names. When you do Harinam, an experienced Harinam, there's so many different kinds of reactions from the people. Just the people who are walking, what are the typical reactions?
Typical reactions here would be smiles.
Smiles, and then in other places, sometimes you get people get really angry as soon as they hear it. And you know, they hate it. It disturbs something deep within them. So different people, according to who they are, what their previous history is, their bhakti punya, they have different attractions or different towards Krishna or towards other things. So what was the question again?
do we get into pious activities with devotees?
Oh, then you brought up Ekadasi. So that wasn't, so like a pious activity such as what? Building bridges, digging wells and...
planting trees.
Oh.
I suppose I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, Chatamasya, Kodashiri.
But those are, those, when they're within the realm of bhakti, when they're the angas of bhakti, they're not considered materially pious. They're the parts of sadhana vaidhi bhakti.
So it means they...
support.
Support.
Yeah, there's no duality. That's the thing.
What about, say, getting into organic food and not wanting to take milk because cows aren't treated well, and struggling in goodness?
Well, there's really something to be said for that, because it's passion and ignorance that kill us.
Mm.
So that's the message of the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that the devotee cultivates goodness. And Prabhupada also told me that too. The devotee generally acts in the mode of goodness. So it's good to cultivate goodness. But whether we should drink milk or not, because the cows are treated so badly, and because the milk is poisonous, because of whatever the cows done to the cows, it's another question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tricky one, but Prabhupada's solution to that was that we should have our own rural communities and protect cows and have real milk and things
mm-hmm.
like that. You know, when I was talking to one of the devotees, Kuma, and Vrindavana takes care of the cows, and she says that the cow's milk is so that, like, you can drink the cow's milk directly from the cow without even boiling it or anything like that. If it comes directly from the cow, and it's so incredibly nutritious.
Mm.
So that's real milk. So whether the stuff that you get in the, what's it called, UHT milk, whether that's really milk or not, that's another question. And then it's been homogenized, it's been pasteurized, they've made sure they've taken it, anything nutritious or good for you out of it. For your benefit, don't worry. Who can imagine what they do to that milk to make it so it doesn't go bad? It's like there's this once, I never saw it actually, but some devotees gave me this, there was this video, I can't remember what it was called exactly, but this man ate junk food for like a month from McDonald's and stuff like that for a month, and they showed the effect. Just from 1 month, they showed the effect on his body from just from that diet, and it was amazing how badly it affected him. And then they took some chips, some potatoes, and then they fried it, and then they bought some from McDonald's, and they after 2 hours, they looked, or 1 hour, they both looked the same. And then after 2 hours, the one that they fried themselves looked starting to look really bad. And after 10 hours, it looked terrible. And after like a week, the McDonald's one still looked like perfectly fresh and everything like that. They were asking, what in the world they put in this to make, you know, what kind of poison to keep everything all the... Yeah, put plastic straws in there. Huh?
Make it crispy.
They do something.
They would do in Singapore.
What would they do?
They self-fried bananas, and they're always super crispy, and they found out now that these guys are
throwing plastic straws into the oil so it's clear or
crispy. Well, at least they're crispy. I mean, plastic straws.
Is that the same dried bananas that you buy here?
No, the fried ones, you buy them, they're freshly fried.
Yeah, that's what he's asking.
Oh, no, this is in Singapore.
Okay.
The ones that are the ones imported from Singapore that you buy here, you mean?
They're quite crispy, though.
There you go.
They're
not banana chips.
Yeah,
not
banana
chips.
Wait. Let's keep on topic here. Get into the merits of imported banana chips or not.
Question from the list. It appears that the party being discussed is a precursor to the process of devotional service.
Yeah.
When you read...
Well, Vishwanath explains, it's... So we said it could be good, but it's not sufficient. But we didn't discuss, is it completely necessary, even though we said that sometimes the great souls, they're indiscriminate in the distribution of mercy.
Mm.
So why is it spoken of here that the piety is very beneficial? What's the beneficial of the benefit of the piety, and how much is it a prerequisite?
Mm.
So it's beneficial in the sense that it can, if someone has piety, they're not so attached to the world of matter.
Mm.
They see, because their more piety means mode of goodness very much, so they're not, a mode of passion causes the attachment. So, because they're not so attached, they can follow the regular principles and attract it towards the renunciation that's ultimately required in Krishna consciousness. So, one stage that gives them, it's necessary, you could say, but not sufficient, but it's not 100% necessary. And especially because in Kali Yuga there's such a predominance of passion and ignorance, that no one, so little goodness, that there's so little piety, so the holy names and the process of Krishna consciousness can create that, and the association with devotees can create that kind of piety. As Prabhupada once said, I have created your piety. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions to you? No.
And the second part of the sentence is that the sinful actions are completely eradicated. That means that sinful actions are always existing. According to that, there are four kind of results of
but that. But the parabdha karma for a devotee isn't it? It's only external. Yes, go ahead, ask the question.
So the result for the sinful actions are always going to come.
So not for a devotee. Devotee gets, he's under Krishna, he's not under his karma. So, or you could say that whatever his parabdha karma is, it's really given by Krishna. So he's not really under his karma, even his parabdha karma, and his other karma is eradicated. So he's not actually under his parabdha karma either, he's under Krishna only. And therefore, tatein kampamsa samikshavano, he sees Krishna's mercy.
That's why he gives two points, that karmic activity and eradication of sinful actions, then only you can get above the delusion, duality of delusion. Those are the two things.
Yeah, because our existence in the material world is composed of piety and impiety.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we are, in one sense.
Mm-hmm.
different variations of the same theme of piety and impiety. So as long as one is under the control of one's piety and an impiety, one can't surrender. But as soon as one surrenders to Krishna, then he's no longer under those things. So either by surrendering or by his detachment from his piety and impiety, but ultimately by surrender, then he's free and then he serves. So see, there's also, see, even though it appears that the first you eradicate the, and then the devotional service comes, but this point is explained also in the prayers of Muchakunda, also in a verse beginning with Yadrit Chaya. So it says that when your material life is over, then you get the association of devotees. You know that verse? In the 51st, end of the 51st chapter of the 10th canto. So the verse says, Muchakunda says that when your material life is over, then you get the association of devotees. But both Srila Jiv Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said this is an example of something called Atisayukta, yukti, which means that it's a way of saying something it's saying the opposite, actually, that it's the association of devotees that caused the end of material life, but it happens so quickly that once you get the association of devotees, your material life is over so quickly that you can put it in the opposite order. So they quote from Shastra to make this point. So because it's the association of devotees that ends one's material life, that ends the piety and impious reactions. It's the same point. Again, it's not that material piety or impiety causes devotion. Or jnana. But rather bhakti, karma and jnana depend on bhakti. So it's not exactly, we mentioned that before, it's not exactly cause and effect. At first you have to end that. But from the other point of view, that you can't purely take up devotional service until those are gone. So, but the process of surrendering so is the process of removing those things. And then you could serve Vridhavata. Yeah, with sickness. Let's just read the last two verses. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman. So there's different terms that he uses in this verse. Brahman, Brahma, Adhyatma, Karma. And then in the next verse, the words of Sadibhuta, Sadidaivam, Sadiyagyam are going to be used. In the beginning of the 8th chapter, Krishna is going to explain these terms. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental activities. Those in full conscious of me who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods, so Krishna speaking about his position, and of the methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. So in the 8th chapter it begins with Arjuna asking about these 8 points that Krishna makes at the end of the 7th chapter here. What is Brahman? What is the Adiatma? what is karma, what is adibhuta, what is adijaiva, who is adiyagya, and at the time of death, how can one know you? So this is these words, terms that are in the last two verses are asked about by Arjuna in more detail, and Krishna explains them, and ultimately he's going to explain how to know him at the time of death. And that's the eighth chapter though. Okay, any questions or comments?
How is the seventh chapter the beginning of Bhakti in the Bhagavad Gita?
Say again?
How is the seventh chapter the beginning of Bhakti?
The six chapters in the middle, 7 till 12, are the cherished gem of the Bhagavad Gita, gems of the Bhagavad Gita, the real jewels. The first six chapters deal with karma pretty much, and the last six more with jnana, and the middle six with more of the devotional service. So the seventh chapter is speaking about devotional service in so many different ways. Krishna is describing himself from the very beginning. He's talking about who can surrender to me, who can't surrender unto me. And he describes the supreme position, the supreme position of the devotees, and how and how Vrida Vrata, that this is the ultimate position, is Bhajanti Imam. The four who can surrender, the four who can't surrender. Daiviye Shugunamayi. Mama Maya Duratya Mameva Tepa Pajante Maya May Tan Tarantite. And he describes his glories with Samaham Madhurava. Next chapter in 9. Yeah. And in 8, we'll talk about remembering Krishna at the time of death as the ultimate way. And then in 9, more, but even more intimate about Krishna's position and surrender to him, and then 10 more about it, even in the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita in 4 verses. 11, Krishna shows his universal form and says, it's only by bhakti you can know me, but this is my universal form, how I pervade and support all in existence, which was spoken about at the end of 10. And in 12, Krishna clearly explains how devotional service is superior to the path of Jnana Marg. And then he ends by describing the qualities of the devotees that make the devotee dear to him. Any other questions?
When the devotee starts devotional service and application of devotees, I mean, when an inspiring devotee starts devotional service, the application of devotees, then the duality of material existence, which is fire and impact activity, that will take him out.
I'm sorry.
From that delusion. He will, I mean, like Jiva Goswami said, that with the beginning of the devotional service, like when you do devotional service, then the material delusion will be taken away.
Because just by definition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So then, but.
Because you're not acting according to what you like and what you don't like, but you're acting according to what will please Krishna, either spontaneously or by following the instructions of devotional service.
So unless a devotee acts 24 hours in that way, then only those sinful activities will be eradicated?
But it's not theoretical. But if you're acting to please Krishna, if your life is dedicated to pleasing Krishna and he's the center, and that means you're surrendered, then quite naturally you're not acting under any karma. See, I may like this, I may not like that, but when I'm doing what Krishna likes instead of just what I like, then we're not under karma, we're under Krishna's care. So the question is, before one is under that care, before one is that surrendered, is one a devotee or something, or one is free from karma? And the answer is yes, by Krishna's mercy, because Krishna says, bhakti janapriya, that if you're a devotee of my devotee, you're also dear to me, you're also my devotee. So by the mercy of...
But before reaching to that consciousness, the world seems like it's a never-ending process if you are not reached to that consciousness.
I don't know what you mean.
Like, unless you have not reached to that consciousness...
What consciousness do you mean?
Of pleasing Krishna.
Of wanting to please Krishna.
Yeah, wanting to please Krishna. So then you are continuously...
trying. Getting more purified and developing your bhakti.
So that might take a lot of many lifetimes.
But you're still not under the material energy in the same way that a materialist is. Krishna writes your name in the book.
Is there a gradation there according to the level of sincerity?
Of how much Krishna will take care of one?
Yeah.
Yeah. According to how much one surrenders. As much as...
So then there must be a gradation of freedom from sinful activity, sinful reaction.
No. It's Krishna. Krishna takes care of the devotee. And then Krishna starts... He tends to the devotee himself. Even the beginning ones. They're not under the control of the material energy in the same way as the materialists. The Krishna factor is there. Krishna is there, but we're not there. Does that answer your question?
Yes,
or not?
It seems like in some cases we're not very much there at all.
Yeah, so, right.
So it's hard to understand that one would be free from
But one's under Krishna. And he's letting you go through your... Under his care you go through your parabdha karma, say. But it's under his care, so it's coming through him.
Mm-hmm.
And you're learning and you're hearing and chanting and becoming purified and following principles and you're becoming purified and become more advanced.
What about the inconsistent practitioner who is falling down?
You mean how does Krishna...
Yeah, in terms of reactions.
That's up to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
How he deals with these. But it's coming through him. That's the point.
Right. So it may look the same.
It may look the same, but it's coming from Krishna.
Like when you see someone who turns away from Krishna and they appear to be, as a result, go through immense suffering, but it shouldn't be viewed the same as...
Well, it isn't.
Right.
And after the devotees go through those things, they realize very often that Krishna was with them all along. By association.
Mm. So Krishna would be protecting devotees if they're in their daily activities, if they're coming into contact with a lot of different people?
If we're careful. But if we contact other people deeply, of course we're going to get affected. But so the devotees protect themselves by good chanting and good association also. But if one doesn't chant properly, and if one doesn't hear properly, and if one keeps bad association, well, Krishna won't forget them, but they will forget Krishna.
It's a bit like a doctor, yeah? If a doctor's going to deal with a lot of diseases, you have to know how to keep yourself somewhat immune from the effects. You always run the risk to some degree of catching disease.
So which point are you emphasizing?
Both. There's always a slight risk.
Well, it depends how healthy the doctor is. If the doctor is in perfect health, then there's no chance of him getting any disease.
Mm-hmm. And he also keeps himself immune.
Well, that's his immunity. It's at his perfect health. Mm-hmm. So perfect health means he's fixed in his service to Krishna. The sun is shining, but we go in our room and close the blinds, lock the doors, turn out the lights, and complain about the darkness. And sometimes people get in a situation where they can't, there's nothing they can do. An obvious example is of those devotees who are in Russia, who got in the very, very early days in the USSR, and they were caught for the devotees and put into prison camps and things like that. What could they do? But they were very, Krishna didn't leave them, and he came to them in different ways because of their strong determination and because of his kindness.
Keeping a good attitude, even in bad situations, and remember to keep a good attitude.
What do you mean?
Well, I suppose I think, like with some devotees, that brahmana that was only drinking milk, and he was hidden between watching Lord Chaitanya when he was dancing, and he was caught out. You shouldn't have been there, and he shouldn't have got someone letting him in. He went away, Lord Chaitanya told him to go, but he didn't get envious or angry. He just kept a good attitude, you know, and he feels so fortunate to have got some little.
Yes, so he was blessed by that. He was blessed that he'll achieve it. He'll achieve proper thing very soon. Mm-hmm. He said, you can't go back to Godhead just by drinking milk. Mm-hmm. So the cause of going back to Godhead. So what a good attitude means? Humble. Okay. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow's the big day, yes?